each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. It's Wednesday. Father Tom Coyce here with you today again. And Tony, glad to be here with you.
Welcome, Father. And those guys.
And those fellas there. And they're great fans. God bless you. Hope you're having a wonderful day out there. It's Wednesday. Spring is in the air. And we're going to wrinkle your brain once again.
Get prepared. Strap in for a wild ride.
It's what it is. I always feel like, I sometimes even use this phrase in my sermons, dropping bombs. But I do think it is much better to drop idea bombs than real ones.
Yeah.
And I firmly believe that unless we understand the idea bombs, then real bombs follow.
Exactly.
And it's a variation on the old theme, the pen is mightier than the sword. So let's see, how can we say that today? The winds of change is more powerful than the military. Well, we'll work on it.
It's close.
It's a work in progress. So anyways, and maybe I'll say at the outset to those who are in my flock note list, if you get my flock note list, the topic I want to try to bend your mind with, and it's certainly bending my mind, is going through a book written by a somewhat famous, but I must say not very famous, because a lot of people don't know Hilaire Belloc. He's a pretty famous Catholic author. He's an English Catholic author. So that puts him in a category that sits on the perch of the Reformation and looking at it, but yet hadn't succumbed to it, shall we say. Hmm. And he drops some bombs. He drops some bombs that I'm afraid we're going to have to investigate. because number one, they will help us understand what's going on in the world today. But it's also why I stumbled upon, and I think this new virtue called holy forgetfulness is important, because I'm going to go back and rehash some problems of the past. And we all know that we don't like to dwell on the past in a certain way, because especially the negative side of the past, right? There's a kind of a virtue today in not being interested in the past, because we sort of know the past does have a lot of yuckiness to it.
As long as we learn from it, and most people don't.
Exactly. Well, and...
Hello there, Peabody here.
Thank you, Peabody,
for showing
up. Once
again, it's time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, yeah. Mr. Peabody?
Well, that would be in the 16th century, 1517 to 1550, to the end of the 1500s, really, that 50 years or so, which changed the course of history, and to which Hilaire Belloc says, it was the most significant event in the Western world since Christ.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It's this early. It's happening this early.
Yeah, yeah. But here's why I say the virtue of holy forgetfulness is necessary, because if we dive into the past and we find some of the yuckiness of the past, especially yuckiness towards Catholics, and then of course non-Catholics are going to remind us of the yuckiness of past Catholic actions toward the new Protestants. And so there's an unwritten rule that sort of says, don't talk about the Reformation, except in the light of trying to be nice to Martin Luther and the subsequent characters of the Reformation. And that in itself is that in itself is a problematic first and problematic introduction to it. I think we have to be as honest as we can and try to especially uncover some of the story that hasn't been uncovered. And we will, you will get a sort of false sense of superiority by being a Catholic if you see the mistakes of the Protestants. And I say a false sense of superiority because the virtues of those Catholics who withstood the Reformation they're not our virtues. They're not our successes. There's sort of an unwritten rule that we're not supposed to talk about it because it is sort of assumed that whatever bad news can be dug up from the past will be used today to be a club, so to speak. We don't want to see another big fight between Catholics and Protestants. at least that's kind of an attitude. Do you know what I'm saying? It's kind of the sense. Although I'm going to say this, and especially for any Hispanic listeners to our show, of course, we could do some of the show in Spanish, I suppose.
We could.
You know, that would be an interesting way to do it. But right now, this hour is in English. I'm quite sure that there's people of Hispanic heritage. That being said, many people of Hispanic heritage come from a culture that doesn't have a great mixture of Catholics and Protestants the way the United States does. And if there is a mixture of Catholics and Protestants in a Hispanic nation, whether it be Mexico, Colombia, Argentina, Peru, whatever, the Protestant influence is a very small, it's a minority, and the Catholic is a majority, which is very different than the United States, where Protestantism is the majority, Catholicism is the minority. So, I feel like I need to spell this out for people today because it's not appreciated enough. Because to know that, to accept that, to see that, is to try to map out a way to deal with issues that we have that we're presently not doing, I would say. Does that make any sense?
That makes sense.
Am I getting somewhere?
Yeah.
This is an introduction.
I'm following you.
We're good. That's good. Wait a minute. I can't help but do this.
Whoa.
I can't help but.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
You got Nick.
What I'm saying is when you look back at history, it makes a big difference of who's telling the story. Who's telling the story. Do you know what I'm saying? Oh, wait a minute. And I tried.
Had to sneak that in there.
I had to sneak that in there because that's from Hamilton. Who lives, who dies, who tells your story? And it's making an interesting point, because that whole popularity of that play is because there was a character in the Founding Fathers of America named Alexander Hamilton, who doesn't have his picture on Mount Rushmore, he wasn't president, but he was a very key figure, yet he was came from such poor beginnings. His mother, he didn't know his father. Of course, they used the B word in the play, which I don't want to repeat over our wonderful airwaves. And he was an orphan young, and he came to the United States and came to the colonies. It wasn't the United States yet. And so the play is kind of like discovering, the ones who wrote the story of the beginning of the United States forgot about Alexander Hamilton.
Mm.
And so we're now going to discover him. We, especially meaning the outcasts of today, because they see the trying to paint Alexander Hamilton as an outcast, and he certainly wasn't of noble birth, or he didn't have connections to noble families, and even though in the early parts of the American history, they didn't have kings over here, but noble families was still pretty important. So Alexander Hamilton comes and represents the kind of person who's an outcast, and so the popularity of the play today is plugging into our popular spirit of feeling like an outcast, feeling like the rejected. But the irony of irony, I think today, is that the most rejected or the most outcast are conservative Catholics.
That's
what I'm afraid to say. I just got to say that there's a kind of a outcast. You know, the conservative Catholic need not apply kind of. It just sort of has that feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the topic du jour. Can I throw, I know we didn't rehearse this, Tony, beforehand, but you're a regular guy who's had a decent education.
A regular guy.
And you're certainly...
Hey, yo, regular guy, come over here.
I want to ask you a question.
Riddle me this.
Yeah, riddle me this. When I say the characters of the Reformation, mm-hmm. Do you have some names, some people that come to mind, or is it in a fog, or
I kind of think of just anybody. I mean, Martin Luther at first, right?
Right. It's probably the big one.
Right.
The big one. We're gonna focus a bit on, because Hilaire Belloc focuses a bit on the characters from England.
Those guys,
and of course, the big one we think of right off the bat is King Henry VIII, and we'd be right, but Hilaire Belloc says he really wasn't the engineer.
Oh.
And he says something very surprising, shocking to me, was that if it wasn't for a couple other characters and a couple other causes that were really significant, that England wouldn't have broken away from Rome. And if England hadn't broken away from Rome, even the Reformation in Germany may have dissolved into what we hoped it would have, a true reformation, which would mean correct the corruption, but you don't have to destroy the church and the sacraments in the process. Anyway, so we're going to come back, and after we're going to start with who Hilaire Belloc thinks is the kingpin.
Uh-huh.
And it's somebody I got to confess I didn't know much about. But we're going to learn about the main kingpin. Yeah,
that's okay? What I like about Wednesdays.
That's right. We're going to learn about it. Who lives and who tells your story? Well, right now, Father Coyes is telling the story, and I'm still alive, so I'm going to still be talking.
There you go.
And this is listener-supported The Winds of Change. So you help us by keep us talking on the air here, okay, my friends? I'm Father Tom Coyes, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold, up or down, this way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation. One way or the other.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change. On AM 750, WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for being here. I'm going to try to do some brain wrinkling by going back into history. I'm going to try to help explain something that Hilaire Belloc describes as the most significant event in modern history since Jesus Christ.
Wow.
That's pretty significant, you know.
There's a lot of pressure there.
There's been a lot of wars between JC and us today, right? Mm-hmm. We might say, oh, no, World War II is the biggest, maybe the Civil War in the United States. Oh, maybe the this or that. And we'd be right in considering we shouldn't think and study about those things. A lot of lessons that can be learned, right?
Yeah.
But what Hilaire Belloc is referring to is the Protestant Reformation. And it's we who are living now, I'm going to say, and even I myself am guilty of what he is trying to say, because I recognize myself so much in what he's saying. He's saying that we've all heard the phrase, to the victors go the spoils,
mm-hmm.
or we've heard the victors write history.
Yeah.
And in a certain sense, through the Protestant Reformation, especially here in the United States, you got to say the Protestants won the battle. So in the United States, the Protestant view and interpretation of the Reformation is what we sort of start with, namely that it was a very good thing, a very necessary thing.
Starting from the beginning, it was a very good thing.
It was a very good. Isn't there a song like that?
Sounds like
there, there's something in there.
Right.
Exactly. So, but I really believe that to go back and recover some of the true stories about it, some of the untold stories, we're going to see that it wasn't such a great thing. To decipher the good and the bad, we have to put on our holy forgetfulness Hats.
What
I mean by that is, again, didn't I say it last week? I think in order to practice the virtue of holy forgetfulness, you have to learn it first.
Right.
So you can't say you're practicing the virtue of holy forgetfulness if you don't know anything about it.
Right.
But it's more like holy setting it aside than holy forgetfulness. It's there, but you set it aside as a kind of, I'm not going to bring this out. I'm going to try to advance our cause or the beauty of life. I'm trying to heal society without bringing out the big stick, so to speak. Like, I don't know. Well, the big stick. I don't even think you can use that phrase anymore, like from when parents, especially dad, had to bring out the big stick.
Right.
What did that mean? That meant a stick that he kept in a closet somewhere that he beat you with.
For switching.
You know? And nobody can do that to kids. Hardly anybody.
Who does that anymore?
It's their kids with a big stick or even a little stick.
Right.
It's a good and it's a bad thing in some ways, you know. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm for capital or corporal punishment, right. But to be adamantly against any form of spanking or hitting of some kind, we need to be creatively finding new ways of disciplining our children but I'm assuming that most of our listeners are not children, or most of you out there are adults and you can handle. So we need to be in the realm of ideas. We need to be in the realm of lessons learned. How do we help someone learn a lesson? And that's what I want to do here with Hilaire Belloc. But again, even before I start reading some of the...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Hey, help.
There we go. There's a couple things that I want to say. Because I'm aware that I'm touching on a topic I'm not supposed to talk about. I'm bringing up a subject that is supposed to be forgotten. I want to touch on a topic that could only bring, only bad things could come. That's sort of the assumption.
Hey.
I don't think only bad things could come if you go back into history and learn some good lessons. But that's kind of, and here's a couple, and obviously me, a Catholic, talking about the Reformation, it automatically brings out two sides, Catholic and Protestant.
As most things
do. a lot of times there. But here's, I don't want it to be us versus them. I want especially faithful, fervent, Bible-believing Christians who are not Catholic to come with me to investigate so that we might be able to heal better and forge a future better together. That's part of it. And here's how I'm going to lure lure some of my non-Catholic brothers and sisters, or some of my Catholic brothers and sisters who think I shouldn't be talking about this. I want to lure them to this topic. Number one, there's been some popular Christian movies of late that I have to confess make me snicker and smile a little bit, like the God's Not Dead series. Have you seen many of those?
I haven't seen any of those. I just never had the time.
And I recommend them. I like them. I find them uplifting, and I find them interesting. I find them some people will watch them and come away as, well, it's just propaganda. it's not artistic. It's not a great movie in cinematography language of some kind or another. And maybe they're not. They might be done better in one way or another, but the topic is key. And what would most What ties some of those God's Not Dead movies together is suffering for your faith. I'll just to review for those who aren't familiar with them. The first one was of a college student who took a philosophy class, and the philosophy teacher was a strong atheist. And so at the beginning of the semester, he just throws out, "We all know that God is a myth and that believers in God are duped by the brainwashing of your parents and society in general that holds on to this God. And anyone who thinks there is a God, you're a fool, unless you can prove to me that there is a God. We're going to start with the atheistic assumption." And so this one guy in the class says, "I'm not going to go along with you." The teacher passes out a piece of paper and says, "Does anybody really believe in God anymore? Or can we just set it to rest?" The philosophy teacher says, "God is dead. We're just going to accept that." And the one student writes on his paper, "No, God is not dead. He's alive and well." And so the teacher reads it. And so then this the rest of the movie is about the preparation for a debate about God. And the college student tries to read and research and try to figure out how do you best answer the atheistic proposition that God is dead. But the key part...
Wrinkled my brain, man.
The key part involves his suffering. If it was just a debate in class, it wouldn't reach to what I'm trying to point out. That is, that there had to be some sacrifice. And it comes in the form of his girlfriend. And it comes in the form of getting into grad school. When you're in high school, you got to do what the teachers say, and you got to say what the teachers want to hear so that you can get into a good college. Then when you're in college, you got to say what the teachers want to hear, and you got to put aside your religious beliefs so that you can get into a good grad school. She tries to get him to get off his high horse and stop trying to prove the teacher wrong, because the teacher's very smart and you're just a wimpy little college student, so let's just go along. Let's just forget it. But he begins to get into he's got a cause, and it's worth fighting for, so to speak. So the second God's Not Dead movie takes the theme, similar theme, but ups the ante a little bit, because the penalty is a little worse. It's a teacher in a public school who in an answer to a student's question about nonviolence, brings up Jesus. And of course, Jesus, I think she even mentioned St. Francis of Assisi, but at least Jesus turned the other cheek. Jesus is presented as someone who believed in pacifism, someone who believed in nonviolence. But one of the students talks to the principal and says that the teacher is teaching Christianity in our classroom. This is offensive. And so a whole case is now then started on the part of the faculty and the principal on behalf of the offended non-Christians. And the teacher is threatened with losing her job. So that there's the rub, there's the sacrifice, as it were. Both stories have this, and they're both Protestant set. The main characters are all Protestant. When they go to a church, they go to a Protestant church. The ministers are Protestant, as it were. The third one has a priest pop in a little way, which I thought was kind of nice. But then not the main characters. So what am I trying to say here? I'm trying to say that as a Catholic who needs to explain that martyrdom has, from the beginning and throughout the history of the church, been a key part of the growth of Catholicism, to forget, to accept the Protestant Reformation hook, line, and sinker, especially the line of faith alone, solo fideism, solo fide. You are not saved by your actions. You're saved by faith alone. That foundational principle in Protestantism doesn't square well with martyrdom, is what I'm trying to point out here. To say that someone who's willing to do or say or hold to a position, both examples in both of those movies, there was an example of doing something where it wasn't just faith alone. Faith came to action, and the standing against the power that wanted to destroy the person who's standing for their faith is what leads to a kind of martyrdom. Okay, now I gotta say this. The first example, a college student who doesn't get into the graduate school of his choice, may be a sacrifice, but it's not the same as the early Christians being thrown to the lions, right. Let's face it. And even the public school teacher who might lose her job. That is a sacrifice. That's a great sacrifice. But is it the level of the Christians being thrown to the lions, or anybody else who loses their life for? And this is where looking at the Protestant Reformation, that there were tremendous so many executions. And some people say, on both sides. Well, the Protestant side and the Catholic side. It's true that there were some, but nowhere near as many, the same amount. And there's a beautiful insight by Hilaire Belloc regarding the way that the Catholics persecuted the new Protestants. That I got to come back with. We'll come back to that. But we're going to take a little break here again. I'm Father Tom Coyce. This is Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
All human life is precious, and all humans are created equal. But not all vitamins are created equal. One company's vitamins stand taller than the rest. At For Life Vitamins, we promote health from the womb to the tomb and support the pro-life movement. Dr. Christosik created For Life Vitamins to optimize your healthy habit of taking vitamins and protect the health of unborn children, the infirmed, and the elderly by donating 10% of sales to support Father Bush's life-changing ministry. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 888-879-1190. Dr. Christosik has helped over 13,000 patients reclaim their health with For Life's Vitamins. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 1-888-879-1190. Simply change your vitamin company and save a life. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 1-888-879-1190.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for listening. Father Coyce here with Tony once again.
Yep.
We're back in the 16th century. I did want to do a series on the Reformation because this is the 500th anniversary of the wow. beginning of the Reformation. And there have been a lot. There's been a few talks and series, or some people have brought attention to it, not too much, but it's all been primarily to praise. I come to praise Caesar, not to bury him. Well, I come to bury Caesar and not to praise him. I come to expose the Reformation as a bad thing as opposed to praise it. And that's not a very popular thing. But even saying that, it's a call to my non-Catholic Christian brothers and sisters to work together. This is a part of holy forgetfulness. We're going to go back to the past to remember some things, to learn some important lessons so that we can be better joined. But then you're going to have to forget it, to not use it as an instrument of insulting.
Kind of reminds me of that Men in Black.
Exactly.
Where they have the agents.
Yeah, Men in Black.
There's like three movies like that, but they use the like light.
They use a cigarette lighter or something.
And it shines a light and you forget what you've seen at that moment and you go back to.
Right.
Which is kind of a cool.
Because the Men in Black are aware of the true danger of the aliens and all the aliens that are living among us that we don't even recognize.
You want to forget seeing that.
Then, yeah. And why do they have to flash the forgetful cigarette lighter at them? Or looks more like a cigar container or something.
Because if they knew it, they would just, you know.
They'd go crazy.
Right. You don't see these things, the monsters or aliens, wherever we're around.
Yeah. Which is it's a kind of a elitist approach to life. We, the intelligent ones, are the only ones who can handle the truth.
But sometimes, too, using it, if you're hit that hard with the truth, sometimes it's jarring. I mean, you need to, you know, I could see you forgetting it for a while so I can slowly bring you in.
Yeah.
Because some of those, like the agents that they had to get, that once they found out, they could handle it, so.
Then maybe they could initiate.
So it's a good tool one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah. But isn't it? Most movie producers and themes are more of the leftist progressive kind of values. And it's funny that here is a hidden, it is part of lefty progressivism to have an elite sort of spirit of, who is the one in A Few Good Men? Remember when Jack Nicholson says, you can handle the truth. You can handle the truth.
And this is true also.
Yeah. But it was put on the lips of Jack Nicholson as coming from the hawkish military man who is to be made fun of today. Those who believe that the people can't handle the truth are to be scorned. But here I'm saying diving into history and uncovering some of the problems of history, I'm going to share some of these things because I believe you can handle the truth. Mm-hmm. And
so you're not going to hit us with the light to make us forget?
No.
Okay.
Not yet. Unless I see you trying to insult people.
Okay.
Then I have to take out the light flasher.
Okay.
Okay, so we learn these things that we're, and that goes for Catholics and Protestants. We're gonna learn some things that are a little bit nasty, you know. As I approach just the topic of the Reformation, I want my good, holy, Protestant brothers and sisters to realize that what's going on today is a bit of martyrdom, that there's a bit of self, to stand up to the forces of secularism and leftism, shall we just say, often will require self-sacrifice or the willingness to lose a certain kind of prestige or in the case of school, a better grade or a better future. And so that you cannot completely understand Christianity without a deep understanding of martyrdom. Why? Because our founder, Jesus Christ, died on something called the cross. And he said something's very similar. And it scares me to realize this. I don't want to die on no cross. I don't want to be a martyr. I'd much rather live without that kind of spirit of self-sacrifice. But it almost seems like it's looming. It's right around the corner. Another amazing thing about the interplay between Protestantism and Catholicism hit me in the opening chapter of Dennis Prager's new book called The Rational Bible. Have you heard this out?
No.
You've heard me mention Dennis Prager many times. I just like listening. He's got an interesting twist on so many things that are going on today. And one of his themes, one of his dreams has been to help bring back the Bible as a fundamental source of wisdom for our nation. It was in the past. It isn't today. And so he put together many of his commentaries and thoughts on what he, as a Jewish person, thinks as the Bible, which is basically the Old Testament. And so he wants to put together a whole bunch of commentaries on the different books of the Old Testament. And he starts with the book of Exodus because it includes the Ten Commandments. And I'm anxious to get into it and read it. But the first chapter already smacks of what I'm trying to say here in this little hour, namely that the Protestant Reformation wasn't a good thing. Because he says in the opening chapter, he says, I called my book The Rational Bible on purpose, of course, because I want it to appeal to readers without requiring of them anything of faith. I want you to read my commentaries on the Bible and just listen to my rational arguments. And he even uses the phrase, and I don't even think that the great oracle Dennis Prager would realize what he's saying, but I could not help but recognize something of this theme that I'm trying to bring out today. And then he says, we don't want to present the Bible on faith alone. And I, as a Catholic who's aware of the Protestant Reformation, that rings a bell.
Mm-hmm.
It should ring a bell, but probably doesn't ring a bell for most people. Why? Could you fill in the blanks there, Tony?
Because they don't believe in works.
They don't believe, right?
Those works are involved.
Part of the
faith in that works.
Part of the initial blast off of the Reformation was a slam at works, as well as a slam at reason, doctrine. Faith is faith alone without reason. And so he's starting his book on a Catholic note, but although I don't think he realizes he is.
He probably doesn't.
And I do think a faithful Jewish person who loves the Old Testament is closer to Orthodox Catholicism than a Protestant Christian or someone who... Protestants tend to forget the Old Testament. They tend to identify the Bible with the letters of Paul in the New Testament. like something similar to what Jewish people say the Old Testament is, mainly the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. Catholics, of course, are known for having the biggest Bible, bigger than the Jewish people because we have the New Testament, bigger than the Protestants because we have seven extra books than the Protestants will accept. So right there, there is a Catholic twist to an appreciation of appreciating the Bible. Another reason why I think Protestant Christians can feel a camaraderie with us Catholics is, oh gosh, Nick wants me to take another break. So I'm going to, there's another key way that my Protestant Christian brothers and sisters can and should unite with me in my humble crusade to save not only our beautiful country, but the church as well. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others. Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
The Winds of Change
on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for being with us, wrinkling your brain here, and talking about a topic you're not supposed to talk about. But I think we're going to talk about it so that you could be more well-informed and understand about the world and our faith.
This is true.
This is what it is. Here's an angle that I wish Protestants would think about so that we would be more united. That is schools. Schools. Up until most recently, most Protestant Christians weren't angry about what was going on in the schools, especially, okay, public schools here. And I will sometimes say what's going on in the Catholic schools is mimicking what's going on in the public schools.
Yes.
And they're losing their Catholic being, shall we say, their Catholic motivation, their Catholic doctrines. In the first 200 years of the American history, Catholics were aware of something. What was that something? They were aware that if the kids were just brought up in the public schools, they wouldn't get the fullness of the faith. They would get an skewed version of the faith. So from the very beginning, Catholics in the United States said, we got to have schools. we got to have our own schools. And that was a big issue, obviously, for 200 years. And did a lot of powerful good for our church, our faith life and everything. But Protestants, by virtue of by virtue of Christianity being part and parcel of the founding of the United States of America, had the proud public schools. So they didn't, you know, if you were a Lutheran, you didn't say, I need a Lutheran school. Or if you were a Methodist, you didn't say, I needed a Methodist school. Because the Protestant schools were able to read the Bible and give the basics, faith and all that. But today, there's just as many, conservative Protestants who are frustrated with the public schools as conservative Catholics. If you're liberal Protestant or a liberal Catholic, you're not too worried. But if you're a conservative Catholic or a conservative Protestant, you're worried about what's going on in the public schools. So now there's a movement to get the schools back. And I, as a Catholic, are sitting in the back, kind of like saying, now you know what we've been going through for 200 years. Can you accept the fact that a society can lose its Christianity completely? And so I'm kind of snickering, but my snickering ends when I think of the difficulties in our Catholic school systems, because a lot is going on in the same way. Get our Catholic schools back. Let me just throw this fourth point out, is that in the early days of the American experiment, which I like to call it, I didn't, of course, invent that phrase, but the Protestants who were in control of the founding of the United States, if you were to ask, well, who is the opposition? Who is the main enemy? It would obviously have been the Catholics. The Catholics were part and parcel of the opposition. And there were different battles and Catholics were conciliatory in a lot of different ways, and we tried not to make our own problems or try not to get in the way too much. That's what we said, okay, we'll do our own school system. You know, we'll keep the peace by being separate. and so that's kind of how it had gone. Today there's a new kind of enemy of Christianity, and it comes in two forms, maybe three. One is atheistic secularism, and the other is Islam. Islam is somewhat of the opposition now. And it's like, oh my gosh, we didn't think that there could be another enemy. And I want my Christian Protestant brothers and sisters and my liberal Catholic brothers and sisters to realize that Catholicism was born out of a pagan world. And we can't forget that there's a possibility of Christianity disappearing altogether. And what's going to come back? Paganism. We're seeing that now again today. I'm sort of snickering in the side by being a Catholic by saying, nah, 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 nah. We knew that there was another enemy besides us. We weren't your main enemy. Us Catholics were not the main enemy, which is what the Protestant Reformation kind of set the stage for. The world was Catholic. We are the new enlightened ones. We got to get away from Catholicism to build a new nation. We'll call it the United States of America. And we got to keep Catholicism out as best we can, because that's the main enemy. And us Catholics are saying, like, no, we're not the main enemy. We're Christian from to the core. And if we lose Christianity, if we lose Catholicism, what comes back is paganism. And now I think we could see that a little bit more. You know what I mean? So here, we're almost to the end of our hour, and I hadn't gone into any of the characters of the Reformation, but we're going to end with this, that it's, like you said, Martin Luther is probably one of the main figures. If you've concentrated on England, you'd say King Henry VIII. But Hilaire Belloc has a different twist, and he's closer to the issue. He's writing in the early 1900s, so he's not a contemporary writer, but he's not contemporary with the 1600s or 1500s. But he says this: Thomas Cromwell was the man who achieved the breach with Rome. Thomas Cromwell was King Henry VIII's assistant, so to speak. He wasn't his prime minister, but he, chief of, I forget his official title, I got to find that, he launched England out into the beginning of the adventure. But, here's the but William Cecil, otherwise known as Lord Burley, reminds us of a White Sox pitcher, doesn't it? I think it's spelled differently. But William Cecil, a.k.a. Lord Burley, was the man who, by his own genius and that of his son Robert Cecil, did the essential work of changing England from a Catholic to a Protestant country. It was he who eradicated the faith from the English mind. It was he who prevented the successor of Catholic England by the power of Catholic Europe outside. I read that wrong. It was he who prevented the succor of Catholic England, or the sweetness of Catholic England, by the power of Catholic Europe outside. It was he who instituted and maintained a reign of terror, the long endurance of which at last crushed out the mass from English soil. Well, those are pretty powerful. It's an interesting insight. So yeah, we're going to have to go back and remember the story. Yeah, we're going to have to.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Just scratched the surface.
It's just scratching the surface. This William Cecil, Reign of Terror. We think of a Reign of Terror with France and their revolution. We think of a Reign of Terror today with Islam. But there was a Reign of Terror against the ones who were trying to hold on to Catholicism in Europe. And it wasn't primarily King Henry VIII. It wasn't even primarily Queen Victoria, his quote-unquote illegitimate daughter, but William Cecil and Thomas Cromwell. And he says it so beautifully, and this was what makes sense. It's because he ties it to the fact that it was really to abandon Catholicism in England and to join the Reformation was a way to become enormously wealthy. You know, that wealth has a very powerful, influential motivating factor. Why? Because to pull down the Catholic Church would be to take all the property, yep, all those castles, all those monasteries, and of course, property was wealth. Still is today, really, but even more so in those days. So, God love you, my friends. I hope your minds are wrinkled a little bit. I'm Father Tom Coase. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. did you say when right from wrong has become so obscure? It does not take that long, can you see?